Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor and ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. This is Tech to Go, a monthly fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists of the CPA Technology Advisor. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Hi, this is Darren Root, executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor for Intersection Live. You're listening to episode 34 of Tech to Go. First, I'd like to thank our corporate sponsor today, ADP, for today's podcast. We're going to be talking about various topics today, all of which I think will be interesting. But let me first introduce our co-hosts, our normal group's all here today. I have Randy Johnston from K2 Enterprises, so welcome, Randy.
Good day to all.
Also have Renee Lassert. Renee's the CEO of Bill.com, so welcome, Renee.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
And Dave McClure, who's the president of the U.S. Internet Industry Association. So welcome, Dave.
Thank you very much. It's a beautiful day here in Virginia.
You know, we're going to have to build an ark in Indiana because it has rained nonstop. Randy, you probably have had some of that in Kansas coming this way, haven't you?
We did. In fact, my wife and I were talking this morning that we can't get out onto the roads around here because they're running what they call mud routes, and you just can't get through on them.
And I'm assuming it's beautiful as always in Northern California, Renee.
You know, we're in our typical fall pattern, which is heavy fog, and then it'll clear and it'll be beautiful. Yes, it will be beautiful today. No clouds probably in the next 2 hours.
Well, we have three, I think, really good topics today. We're going to talk a little bit about Microsoft Expressions, which is has something to do with websites, right, Dave?
Well, yeah, it has to do with websites, and it has to do with Front Page, which is the previous web authoring tool that Microsoft had available. And actually, I'd welcome some thoughts from Randy and Renee both, because one of the pet peeves I've had for many years is nobody seems to be paying attention to the small office environment when it comes to web authoring. You either have to use somebody's built-in tools, which gives you very little flexibility, or you have to use a very low-end Mickey Mouse kind of package, or you have to do it by hand. But if you really want a sharp website, you want to be able to maintain it, you're stuck with two or three very high-end, very complicated packages. And that was, you know, frankly, I was very upset when Microsoft killed off Front Page. I was upset earlier than that when they killed off Front Page Express, which was a beautiful little fast, easy program. And I was very skeptical about the new Microsoft Expression, which is their new suite. And it's not just web authoring. There are graphic design tools in the studio as well, and some really advanced stuff. I've been playing with it now, and frankly, I'm a lot more impressed than I was from the outside. It's not as complicated as it looks. They could have done a better job with the online tutorial. They could have done a better job with online help. But those are nits. Overall, not a bad package, and I think something that with very little effort and maybe a good dummies book from the store, you could get up to speed pretty quickly on this. And it looks like a good package. The difference is, and then I'll take a breath and let Randy talk. The difference with this package is, unlike Front Page, Microsoft is making a real effort to be compatible with all of the standards, and that, to me, is worth its weight in gold.
Mm-hmm. That is a nice step forward, I'll just say, attitudinally across the Microsoft products, because with the new Office 2010 Office Web products, one of the things that they said they do there is let products run in the Firefox browser, the Chrome browser, and so forth, which is actually pretty interesting. Now, we have actually used, like you, Dave, Front Page from way back for our website work, and as it turns out, when Expressions became the replacement for Front Page, we went there fairly shortly afterwards. thought that expressions was a little harder to use, but it was also notably more feature-rich in terms of the things you could do to websites. And what I realized really at that point is the ability for most users to do a simple website, that was pretty much gone. You know, that was something you could do with front page. You could use the templates. You could build out pretty nice websites. Still in there, but it has gotten so complex, it's just not really an option. So when I think about our CPA firm listeners, and, you know, they obviously need a strong web presence where they can have integrated logons, where they can do things for their clients, where they can update it frequently. It's pretty tough with the off-the-shelf tools from any of the other providers, and I think maybe it'd be helpful among us to name, you know, some of the options that are out there. How are we going to get this problem solved for the typical user?
I'll be honest, Randy, I have not found that I would use. I don't know what you have to recommend, but whatever you say, I'm going to write down and go try it.
Well, I appreciate that, but, you know, the bottom line to this, I think, becomes that for firms that are maybe 35, 40, 50 people or less, I don't see, unless they have somebody who happens to have web skills in-house, that they really have much of a solution. Now, some of the ones that are clearly out there that work and do a pretty nice job, you can clearly use the CCH site builder. It's clear that you can use, Thompson's website builder. It's clear you can use Accountants World website builder, just to name three that are kind of off the shelf. And it's also pretty clear, but they're not anywhere near as high a quality, in my opinion. You can use the Microsoft, Live approach, the Live website, the Live workspaces, and all of that pieces. And you can use the Google Sites. But all of those probably take more technical expertise than a good number of our listeners would have.
Have any of you looked at or used the Homestead offering that Intuit now owns?
No.
I have not.
I'd be happy to.
I've heard, before Intuit bought Homestead, I heard many good things in the Valley about their website, building tool and how easy it was just to get going. And so, I wonder, with Intuit's efforts into the account space, if they figured this out yet, but it seems like they ought to be focusing on accounts and building sites for them because they've got a platform to do it.
And Darren, at the risk of putting you a bit on the spot, I know that you've been pretty darn focused on, web presence and integration and so forth. What type of options did you consider and where did you land?
Well, we first started as a firm using, one of these CAN packages that one of the vendors provided, Site Solutions or, Thompson's Web Builder. My challenge with all those, I think they're a nice starter solution, but they kind of all look alike. It's an easy way to get started, but I found very quickly that how important our web presence was as a firm and how much we needed to have a more feature-rich solution that looked different. We actually developed our own, and with RootWorks, and I don't want to sound self-serving here, that's one of the things that RootWorks does. We developed some custom websites for accounting firms, but it's a much more expensive option than some of these just canned solutions that you can get from some of these vendors.
Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, and I knew, Darren, that might put you a bit on the spot on that, but that was an option that I think some of the listeners need to hear about. For my other company of NMGI, we actually wound up going down the path of Joomla, which was an open source content control type of product. And that actually wound up being a really good option for us, but we also were lucky enough to have web developer expertise in-house to do some of the initial conversions. Once the site was in place, not really hard to maintain, and the custom site building work, we are actually able to outsource for the ridiculously low sum of $150. So we specified what we wanted, and there was a contractor from Romania that built the basic design for $150 US, and we're still using that design with great satisfaction.
So, or Dave, your impression of Expressions so far has been reasonably positive. Have you built
and,
out the
And it's
yet?
Going to be a lot of work to learn, but I run enough websites that I think I have to do that.
True, but accounting firms are typically not going to have they probably never run a website, so those skills are going to, like Randy mentioned, are going to be probably absent from their firm, don't you think, Randy?
I think they will, and you know, as I'm actually in Expressions as we're talking here in the podcast today, as I look at this, you know, even the technical people that you may have, your network administrators or so forth in your firms, the chances of a lot of the technical people being able to do this easily and well are not so good. One other traditional problem that was true with FrontPage has remained true here with Expressions is the websites that are built and the code, the HTML code that is generated, has a lot of clumsiness and overhead in it. So the sites will tend to run a little more slowly, and as David pointed out earlier, in the old versions, a little less compatible with all of the different browsers. The new ones, they're getting a little better at following the standards.
But they're still bloated.
Yeah, they're still bloated. You know, as I look at the sites that we're maintaining today from a K2 perspective that are maintained with Expressions, there's a lot of extra code in there that, frankly, sometimes we'll go to the code site and just delete the code because it's an unneeded chunk of code, and we're just trying to optimize the sites to run quicker.
Well, I think I'm going to go try Intuit's product and see what they look like, because obviously, everyone has abandoned the small business market when it comes to web authoring, and that tells me there's a huge opportunity for someone to step in and fill that.
Mm-hmm. But you know that the Microsoft Office Live offering here isn't bad. For CPA firms who might be trying to direct their clients, and let's say they have maybe a homeowners association or some other organization like that that needs a website presence or would like one, for no charge, you can actually build the websites. They do have kind of a homogeneous look. That's the downside, but for many of those organizations, that's okay. And you can get things like meeting notices and, you know, locations and rules and all those things published without too much trouble. And the real beauty of it is it's free. You can acquire your own domain name initially at no charge, and then it's got a very small renewal charge. You can have up to 50 email accounts, and you've got a web presence. So for no charge to speak of, and for a little bit of effort, I think most people who can read and have a little bit of technology background can actually build a fairly useful and functional website.
You can have for next to nothing an ugly, simple website.
That's not bad. Well, you know, you can have for next to nothing ugly, or you can have zero. And I think I might take ugly over zero.
It's interesting. I mean, I just, you know, decided to go look at Homestead while we're talking, and it sounds very similar to what you're describing with Microsoft Live, Randy. But you know, they market that they have 2,000 different templates. So you pick your industry, you could say accountant, you could say a baker, and then they've got 20 different templates there. And there's a 2-minute demo that I'm watching, and I mean, you can put up a site and it looks like 10 or 15 minutes, and it looks pretty nice.
No, my only real complaint about this is, okay, how many accounting firms are there nationwide, and there are 20 templates? So if everyone goes there, you know, 1,000 other websites are going to look just like yours. And when you try to go to leave, you can't take the code with you. If, for example, your firm grows and you say, wow, we really need something on a little faster server, or we need something portable, we want to take it to our own ISP, sorry, it's in their offering tool. And that's the problem I have. That's really the only problem I have with the, you know, we'll help you build it kind of websites, because they are very useful.
Well, guys, let's shift gears a moment. And I know last time we talked a little bit about Intuit's acquisition of Mint.com and what was going on with Quicken and Mint and that sort of strategy. I'd like to talk a little bit more about what's going on with QuickBooks Online Edition. Renee, you seem to be plugged into Intuit a little bit. Tell us what you know is happening as it relates to QuickBooks Online.
Well, generally, you know, what I'd seen in the last couple of years is probably they got started with QuickBooks Online in 1999. By 2003 and 2004, the energy was shifting away from investing in new products, and all the engineers and teams that I knew that were working on it were getting pared back, and they just weren't doing much. Well, that changed about a year ago, a little bit more than I think the initiative a year ago was, no, we have to focus on QuickBooks Online. So about a year and a half ago, everything I had heard is they were shutting down QuickBooks Online. They were going to be sending the development to India or someplace like that, and just kind of making it more of a secondary, a product. And a year ago, that decision changed, and 6 months ago, they brought in some new manager to the team. They are adding to the team in Mountain View. They are growing. Our conversations with them, just as to the point that Darren mentioned, we integrate with accounting software. Obviously QuickBooks Online are two players we want to integrate with, and they're very open. A year ago they didn't want to talk to us about modifying their SDK to make things easier for us, and now they're very open and want to see what else they can do to really help us adopt and customers that are theirs. So it seems like the attitude has changed, and that Intuit is really going after how do we make the software as a service offerings work? And QuickBooks Online, I think it has somewhere between 100 and 200,000 customers. They don't disclose it, but that's kind of the guess that I have from the things that I've heard in the Valley. So, I think it'll be interesting to see a year from now how the product has changed. So,
well one thing that's probably find about it. Go ahead, Randy.
Well, no worries. One thing I have heard, and I believe it was stated publicly, Renee, was they've got over 100,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
And so we know that the number is north of that. And, with the trend towards using their new market clearing, the IPP approach, obviously there was, a conference in Chicago to drive that topic a little bit more this week. I think QuickBooks Online becomes a very strategic product in the long haul for Intuit.
Yeah, no, I think it is. And as little data points that you can see from the outside is, a year ago the QuickBooks Online product did not work on the Mac because it was heavily ActiveX based, and that's not true anymore. So now it works on a Firefox or a Safari browser. So I think it is becoming a strategic play. They have lots of different offerings they can do in the small business arena that should be pretty interesting.
Now, from my accounting firm's perspective, we have this a huge client base, as do many firms, somebody who just needs a bookkeeping application, and they bought QuickBooks in the past. And now they want access to QuickBooks anytime, anywhere, so that means you have to start moving into sort of a hosted environment. And there's costs associated with that. And so I think that QuickBooks Online starts looking more attractive, especially to that small business that is not very complicated. Because some of the features I've seen in QuickBooks Online that are pretty attractive are this automatic online banking syncing at night, as well as credit card transaction syncing at night, and integration with Bill.com. And all of a sudden, it's starting to become kind of attractive.
Yeah.
And when you consider the accessibility of the browser-based product, that's really quite good. I know our Canadian operations use the QuickBooks Online as the only accounting methodology for that section of the business. And when you look at the hosting alternatives, whether that's Right Networks or whether that's InSync, where you're trying to take the desktop model and share it, there's a fair bit of expense that goes with that. But it's still probably better than trying to maintain the infrastructure in-house and all the technical issues that a small business just isn't ready to address. And it really leads then to some of the alternatives that might be out there, whether that's small invoicing products like a FreshBooks or a Sage Billing Boss, or whether it's a more complete accounting system like the Accountants World offerings.
Renee, what do you see over the next year? Intuit seems to be investing in QuickBooks Online. Do you see that changing drastically, modestly? What are you seeing there?
I don't think it's going to change drastically. I think it's they're recommitted to the product as a platform for their small business SaaS offerings. So I do think that you'll start to see the benefits of that in the next year. The good news is 5 years from now, it's going to be a really amazing application. It's already a great application, but the commitment that they're putting to it, I think, that'll be the future of the company on the small business front. If they stay with the fervor that I've seen in my conversations with the folks over there.
Well, I find what happens in an accounting firm is, we took a look at this a number of years ago and said, it's just not there, can't use it. I think it's probably time for some of these firms to take another look at that as a solution for many of their clients, especially based on the price point.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, the Intuit solutions are not always exactly everything you need, but they do a lot of stuff in the way they integrate with the merchant services, and obviously they have payroll now, and all that can be very compelling. And so it'll be interesting to see if they get rid of those features that are the real barriers for people to adopt en masse.
Hey, Randy, you mentioned something that I think we should follow up a little bit on, and Renee will know something about this as well, and maybe you too, Dave, is you mentioned the IPP. Can you kind of give us a general framework of what Intuit's IPP is, what it means, what we're going to be seeing as it relates to that in the future?
Well, I'll give it my best start and then let others fill in holes. But probably from a listener's perspective, the best way to think about this is as an electronic connection and clearinghouse. Intuit would like vendors and publishers of all kinds to hook up to their electronic clearinghouse through a new replacement for their software developers kit. So what used to be the SDK will get augmented or replaced with a new interface, the IPP interface. And the idea here is that this interface can allow publishers to hook up and synchronize, if you will, with QuickBooks data and with others to actually become an online clearinghouse. Now, from Intuit's perspective, this is a real important strategic decision and positioning, because they intend to use that as an additional revenue source. And loosely speaking, there'll be about a 20% charge through that, what really winds up being new revenue to Intuit, a pretty big deal. But from an end-user perspective, the benefit is that we get a seamless connection of lots of different services that can talk to our QuickBooks and other Intuit products.
I have a couple of thoughts on it. I mean, I think it's the right thing to do. I think getting the data in the cloud is probably going to be the most valuable asset for both the Intuit customers as well as Intuit, and I think IPP is the right step to get there. The thing that's challenging, which I think is important to understand, that I don't think it's going to be overnight, is this concept of a federated app. So, they want everybody who uses, kind of like Microsoft tried to get everybody to go use Passport years ago, they want everybody to have one login ID, and it lets you into any of the apps. And as a developer who's working on an app that has lots of different types of users, it doesn't always make sense to try to fit our user sign-in process into their sign-in process. So, we'll work with them and figure something out, of course. But I think for IPP as a whole, it's going to be one of their challenges, is that, this requirement that if you're going to be part of it, you have to use the Intuit sign-in process and you have to use Intuit billing. These are things that are going to be difficult for developers, I think, to bite off.
And the developers that I've spoken to date who are trying to write the code with the tools they've been supplied so far, or the requirements so far, is they're actually having performance issues at times. So with any new application, there's going to be some technical difficulties, and there's also going to be some marketing difficulties. And I think, Renee, you're dead on with this single sign-on type of approach. Clearly a wonderful vision on that side, but how quickly, you know, the small mom-and-pop developer that's got an odd little QuickBooks add-on can convert or afford to rebuild might be a bit of an issue. You know, in some other accounting software markets, when the rebuild requirement came into place, there was a lot of third-party providers that just said, you know, I can't do that. We're no longer going to make our product work here. So I think there'll be some fall off. I think there'll be some new ideas that are brought forward too.
Yeah.
Well, no, certainly, guys, want to continue to watch this as it moves forward. But with the little time we have left, I'd like to kind of pivot. You guys, before we got on the call, we were talking a little bit about net neutrality. And Dave, you're probably best to fill us in on what's going on here.
Well, basically what has happened is President Obama made a campaign promise that he would institute a form of network neutrality rules. Now, these are very controversial within the industry, and companies are lined up on both sides. But the new FCC chairman, Janikowski, announced that he is going to open a proceeding to consider taking the four broadband principles that the FCC adopted in 2005 and expanding them with an additional principle, maybe even two additional principles. And it's all going to go through the FCC's common process. It's going to be very difficult, and it's going to excite a lot of passions on both sides. The problem I have with the entire discussion is that it's a bumper sticker. No one can really define equitably what they mean by net neutrality. And we've had so many definitions over the years that it's all become very clouded. Where the fear comes down is, if you have very large networks, at what point do those networks exert their market power to shut out innovation or to shut out smaller competitors who would perhaps seek to offer a competing product to something the network offers? From the network's point of view, just opening your network to any kind of application, no matter what, no matter how much bandwidth it uses, no matter what harm it may do to the network, is an invitation to disaster, and their customers rely on them to keep the network up and running and to keep it running smooth. And we have had some problems, for example, in cable systems, where the more users using bandwidth, the slower everyone's internet connection gets. We've had some problems with it in the past. So what you're going to see, some very harsh negotiations to try to achieve a balance between the 5% of power users who want anything that they want, anytime they want it, as fast as they can get it, and the needs of the network operators who have to keep everybody happy at the same time. And it's for my money, it's a classic marketing problem in which the government is somehow going to insert itself and make rules. We'll see how that works out in the long run. We will have network neutrality legislation. I'm convinced of that. The question is, how good will it be for the industry?
And, you know, part of the reason this probably came up and we were talking about before we jumped online is I had actually read an article on this in The Economist in the September 26th edition. So if some of our listeners want to go back and see some of the background on it, because there was not only the coverage, just as Dave has lined it out, explained quite elegantly in the article, but there was also coverage of the changes that occurred on September 30th for ICANN for domain names and how they're going to be administrated and so forth. So there were some really, really significant changes for ICANN. And it really, I think, led to the announcement of permitting Skype back onto the iPhone this week. I think that was part of the motivation for AT&T actually making that available. And there was additional coverage in that same issue of The Economist on mobile banking worldwide, and they reported statistics of 4 billion cell phones now in use, and the numbers were just amazing in terms of what was actually happening globally with this internet access via the cell phone. And again, some wonderful backup on the access of the internet, how it's used, not only on the cell phones, but in businesses, and then for large-scale things like Facebook and other things were also covered there. But a statistic that I think is actually pretty interesting is the World Bank says that for every extra 10 cell phones per 100 people, there's an increase in GDP of 0.8 of a percentage point. So cell phones and internet access can make a lot of difference in GDP output.
Yeah, but the only problem, I'll respond to that, Randy, because I agree with you. And by the way, we need to talk about ICANN next time, because that is going to be, it will have huge impacts. The only thing I would note, and I agree with you 100%, is we don't yet have the fiber infrastructure we need to support all those users on 4G networks, and that has got to become a national priority for the country, because every one of those cell towers has to have a very high-speed, very wide broadband connection, and right now they don't. That's why 3G is as slow as it is.
Yeah, and in fact, that is one of the concerns, without trying to sound political in any shape or fashion here. The infrastructure rebuild that is needed so badly across the U.S. is continuing to concern me, because we continue to drop in being, quote, a wired nation. We're well down into the second set of teens. I think the last issue or article I saw on this said we were number 18 globally. And we have got to have an infrastructure that keeps us competitive from an internet connectivity perspective. And it makes a difference in our cell phones. It makes a difference in our internet access. And frankly, I think it makes a difference in our ability to compete globally to have this type of infrastructure.
And while I agree with you, I want to put on the boxing gloves right now, Randy, because I'll go to war with you over those OECD rankings of nations. Darren,
yep.
Put that on the agenda. We got to talk about the rankings, because that is a deliberate political attack on the U.S. using phony numbers. And I can tell you, chapter and verse, Randy, we're not that bad off. Now, we are bad off for infrastructure, no doubt about it.
Yep.
Right now, I'd be a little bit afraid to drive across any bridge in this country, but we're not that bad off in broadband, and I think that's a statement that needs to be not only made but proven, and I'd be happy to do that with you, Randy. I'll duke it out with you.
Hey, that'd be great. Would love to have the backup facts, because I know what it's like here in Kansas, and we don't have a lot of access.
This is just a little, you guys talking about this stuff just reminded me of one of my newest gadgets that I love, and it's called a MiFi from Verizon. You guys played with any of those yet?
Absolutely.
Yes. And it's just wonderful, right? I mean, I think all accounts should have it, because that way you can be connected anywhere. I was at home. The DSL at home was acting up. I pulled it out, got back on the web, and everything was fine, you know, and called AT&T and they fixed the DSL. But the point is, it's just for, you know, a small amount of money in the office, every CPA can have a backup internet connection and use it from any coffee house, any place in the world. You know, it's just kind of cool.
Here, spell that for us, Renee. Spell it so everybody knows what you're talking about.
It's MIFI, MiFi from Verizon. So you just go in there. You don't have to have any other phones with them, but, you know, they give a discount. It actually, we set up a corporate account, and then all the employees automatically, I think, got 15% off on any of the phones that they had. They don't have to have it billed centrally, of course. They just bill, you know, straight to the employees. But I've been very impressed. And, you know, the device was a little tricky to get it set up for some reason. Their manual and the you know, wasn't just quite turning it on. But when we talk about infrastructure, you know, the power of what we're going to be doing wirelessly is going to be pretty amazing, I think, in the next 10 years. And it's going to level the playing field across the world, right? I mean, it's just going to make it, it's going to be a bunch of satellites in space, and that's what's going to make it all happen.
And that this whole, well, let's call it SaaS-hosted environment, really drives home the point of how important it is to have solid, high-speed internet, and I think in many of our cases, as you're just outlining there, Renee, with backup.
Yeah. Well, and another thing, Darren, that we could add to the list to talk about kind of related to this is we use Exchange for mail at the office. At least we did until last Sunday night when the server died, completely died. All the data was backed up, but, it was going to take somebody from Dell, a day to get out here to replace the hard drive, and we were going to be without mail for a day. So we said, that isn't going to work, and we switched everything over to Gmail. We have a corporate domain, and, it's pretty amazing what the offering there is much cheaper than Exchange. So anyway, infrastructure stuff might be another interesting conversation as CPAs get ready to, think about how they can make their life redundant in all aspects.
Hey, Renee, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Just one question quickly, Renee. When you switched over to Gmail, did you have to agree to their terms of service that makes all the contents of your emails property of Google?
Well, it's a corporate account, and the IT guy, I'd have to ask him. He and I talked about that, and, we feel like if the feds are coming after us, if they're subpoenaed for any reason, we're going to have to disclose it anyway. So, they're not allowed to market against it. They're not going to be reading it to give us marketing messages, if that's what you're going after.
Well, that would be my concern, because that's kind of, they lay claim to the contents of your emails, and that's why I won't use their service.
Well, we're paying, right? So the paying customer, if there's a criminal case, I think, yes, they have to turn over those records. But other than that, they're not using that content.
Cool. I love these conversations when we get a little feisty. It makes it more fun.
It is far more interesting.
We're out of time today, so let's wrap it up. Until next month, we've got some good topics. We're going to talk about some the internet rankings, which I think will be fun and feisty. And we'll also talk a little bit about Gmail, because, Renee, I really want to follow up on that topic and help accountants think about what their strategy might be moving forward. So, gentlemen, thanks for your time today.
Sounds great. Okay.
Yep, we'll see you next
time.
Okay, take care.
All right, see you guys.
Bye, guys.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisors' other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106. Or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via talkshoe.com.